Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Grayscale Gorilla Podcast. With me today, we have Chris Schmidt. How are you, sir?
Hello, good morning.
Looking good. Got the little mic sticking on. Looking nice. Got the lighting. I got the worst lighting today. Chad, how you feeling, man?
I'm feeling good. How are you feeling? Are you okay?
Good.
Do we need to send money?
Yeah, it looks a little weird here, but I'm in San Francisco, staying at a friend's apartment, and it... You know what? It's a free apartment in San Francisco, and that's what I'll say about it. You know how expensive things are here? This is like a $4 cup of coffee.
That's outrageous.
Wait, but let me see if it's... Hold on.
Is it good?
Oh, man. They do know how to make some coffee out here, I'll tell you. Well, I'm out here for the week, seeing some friends and seeing the city, and but I wouldn't miss a podcast. Not with you guys. Miss you guys. We got a fun topic today. We're going to be talking about... talking to clients, how to talk better with clients. And I want to tell a story from back in my school days on learning how how talking to clients is such a thing that I never knew was an actual part of our business until a teacher told me about it. So that'll be fun. If you've ever wanted to interact with clients better or just new to this stuff, you want to learn this will be a fun episode. But what else is going on? Can I tease the 5 second projects?
Well, I think you just did.
Did it.
Cats right. Out of the bag.
So we'll have some news about that. That's literally the only tease I wanted to do. But if you guys have heard about 5 second projects, we've been doing a lot of work behind the scenes trying to get this back. And Chris and Chad in particular have been designing and building all this stuff. So just a little teaser, just for those of you who've heard it, it's been a long time, but I'm excited to see that word coming back. Of course, Gorilla Cam is out and doing well, getting a ton of feedback from our customers and people already using it in big commercial spots and everything. We're just getting a ton of feedback and a ton of like good quotes about Gorilla Cam. So that's been really fun. If you haven't checked that out,
you know, it's been fun on that one, in contrast to usual. Usually we release a plugin and there's a bunch of people who are like, oh, I could have used this last week. But this time there's a bunch of people being like, oh, this is perfect timing. I need this right now. So that's been kind of fun.
The feedback has been phenomenal. In fact, like I love that stuff. I love it when people like tell you like that they're using in production and it's helping them do all the things that we were hoping it would do. But I think this is the first product launch where I've seen people sort of like quickly use it. Like some people get it and they might use it in project when it comes up or maybe a couple weeks, but people are like getting it and using it in production like right away.
Yeah. It's not anything you get and then you're like, oh, I'll use this one day. It's a camera tool. It's like almost any project where there's a camera, it's usable. Right. So it, instantly people are like, yeah, I have a camera in this scene. Let's do it. And of course it is our 97th podcast.
Ooh-wee.
97 podcast. Now we're still in one of the best years in music here. I'm gonna pull up
that's debatable. We'll have to see.
I mean, I think 94 is still like still my...
Don't Google anything. You might lose your internet.
Yeah, I can't Google anything, but I'm just excited we're in the 90s. Listen, 2000s were great, but most excited that we're coming up on the 100th podcast, which we're going to do something special for. And I just can't believe it's been 100 dang podcasts. So I figure we could jump right into the topic today. Is everyone okay with that? Everyone feeling good?
Yeah.
This might be the San Francisco coffee talking, but I'm pumped. Pumped about this one. So this topic, I was thinking about this, and Chad, you said you had talked to somebody about this topic earlier this week, and it's been on my mind as well. And let me just tell you a quick story to get into this topic. I was in college. I went to Chicago. I thought I was going to college to learn After Effects. Boy, oh boy, was I wrong. Boy, oh boy, did I learn all the other things except After Effects, right? When I went to college. But I did learn, there was one teacher in particular, and he was one of my favorite teachers at school. And he had this day where he gave us a project, and it wasn't even motion design. It was like you had to cut stuff out of a newspaper and scan it and use a copier and make bigger versions of it, smaller versions, and paste it on a page and just build your own little piece of artwork. And I remember making it, setting it up, putting it up in the front of the class, and the teacher said, his name was Chuck, and he said, "All right, pitch me your project." And so I stood in the front of the class and I go, okay, well, I took a photo of some CDs and I thought what the CDs represented to me was like listening to music in a city. So I stacked up the CDs, you know, that looked like a building, and I kind of took a photo of a bunch of CDs and then copied and pasted it all over the page and made a little city out of CDs. And he's like, "That was the worst pitch I've ever heard in my entire life."
And he's, you like, quit school and became
then I cried. Barista. And he, I loved him because he was like this. He was just very, he was very client focused. He taught me very early on that what you are selling and what you need to talk about is not about you. When you talk about your own work, you don't talk about you. You talk about the client. You talk about what they're trying to get out of it. You're trying. And he talked about this in a way. He's like, "I know that this is an art piece for you, but you need to give us the emotion of this. What is this?" So I came back at it and kind of gave it another shot. And so what I came back was I started telling a story. So I was like, "Have you ever been on the bus and you had the perfect song with the perfect beat and you looked out the window and you almost thought the entire city was listening to the same song you were? Have you ever had that feeling?" And a couple people in the class kind of nod their head. And I was like, that's the feeling I'm going for with this piece, right? And that's a completely different way to talk about your work. It's in a way to connect with another person and not in a technique or what camera you used or what renderer you used. It was this very, it opened my mind at the time to think about discussing your work in a new way. And it was very, very simple at the time. But over time, I started to see how you talk to clients and how you do. And the reason I wanted to bring this up and talk about it is, you know, there's a lot of people throughout their career listening to this podcast that either haven't talked to clients a lot and don't understand that there's a completely different language that you talk to clients than when you talk to your friends. And even people that are in the industry that might want to, you know, step up their skills on how to talk to clients, or, you know, you're in the room, you don't know how to talk these ways. I figured we could kind of all discuss maybe any stories we've had or any thoughts we've had on it. Cause I know, Chad, you've been in quite a lot of rooms with clients, me not as much. And it's been a while removed from it, but I learned a lot in those years. So that's kind of the idea, the topic. And I hope by the end of this podcast, you guys will have some more tools, some more skills to talk about your work in a more emotional way. But Chad, maybe you can, go through, like, where did you start to learn all this stuff?
I was similar. Well, no, actually, when I was in school, the only sort of exposure I had any sort of that sort of instruction was when we'd critique each other's work, and you weren't necessarily trying to sell your work. You were basically just looking for feedback and all that sort of thing. But I did get experience in how to sell things to people when I was at my job, at my part-time job, putting, you know, while I was in college and when I was ending high school, I worked pretty much as a carnival barker at Great America. And so I worked in games. And so all day I would just try to get people to play my game and try to get them to stick around and keep playing the game. So and then I also was the amazing Alfredo for a couple of summers, which, if you don't know what that is, my job was to guess your age, weight, or month of birth. And that was just like a silly game they had in the park where they just gave away prizes left and right because they were like little chintzy prizes. But that game was a lot of fun because I learned how to essentially connect with people and grab their attention and sort of make them come along on this fun little journey. But yeah, so I kind of learned how to approach people and how to gain their trust and like sort of be comfortable around them and them to be comfortable around me just from doing that all day for a long period of time. And then when I got into the industry I never even talked to a client because clients were completely isolated to the directors and CDs and producers. So I never was even put in front of a client, but I was very much interested in how that worked. So I paid attention. I just watched all of the CDs and producers and owners and whatnot. Anybody that was interacting with a client, I would watch them and I would study how they talked, how they approached selling the work, how they just like, there's a few people, and Eric Anderson is one of them who taught me a lot about how to do that, how to navigate those waters. And I was so shocked at how much of what he was doing was very similar to what I was doing to get somebody to play, Can Do or one of the other games that I ran. And it was really funny to me. It was like, whoa, this is like so similar. He's just using a very similar sort of confident approach to get them to buy into what he's trying to sell. And it was fascinating to me. I loved it. And then of course, you know, there's going to be interactions with clients that are just like painful, but for the most part, if you sort of approach it right. And I think a lot of people that I studied throughout my career, I think I chose the people that I thought did it really well and weren't super cheesy about it and were authentic in who they are, but also really good at persuading people to see things from their point of view. You're doing. You're persuading people.
Yeah. It's also sales. I'm glad you brought that up. Like this is selling. These are skills to learn to sell. And I know my early jobs were sales. I sold TVs and home theaters, and I was a wedding DJ and DJing at a roller rink. And in a lot of way, you're entertaining and selling people. You know, that's really the two things that all these kind of jobs have in common. So when I started to having to learn how to talk about my work, for me, I picked it right up because I had those keep the party going like vibes, right? And you know this too. Like if you want them to stay here and give you another $2 to like play the game, you got to keep the party going. Like you want to stick around, you don't want to leave. And in many ways, you have to think about talking to your clients in that way. But there's, and just to frame up this, you know, this conversation, what we're really talking about is how to talk about what the client wants and what the client wants to do with what they're paying you to do, right? So think about it this way, that the client, let's say it's, I don't know, what's a like a good example? Like, let's say it's a coffee. A lot of coffee going today. So the local coffee place wants you to make some sort of image, render, either product shot or cool commercial or whatever it is to sell more coffee. They have a very specific reason that they are making this. They want people to have awareness of their coffee shop. They want you to know that they sell coffee. They also want you to get this, maybe they want this to have a cool vibe, or like they want you to have a feeling like it's warm inside and come in and warm up and get a cup of coffee and it's cool in here and you can get your work done. Like what they have their vision of what they want to accomplish when they hand over cash to give you an animation or 3D render job, right? So all you're trying to do in that case is you're trying to use the same language that they are using in their head to make sure that you're on the same page. There's, you know, you're not trying to lie to anybody. That's not what sales is about, right? That's not what this is about. It's about using their language and making sure that you're on the same page so that what you are delivering to your client is what they want and is also working, right? So you want to be in the same language as your client. And so I'm sure there's some ways we could talk around this, but for example, if they come to you and they're like, we want this warm, inviting, you know, feeling, try to like use those words back to them when you're describing why you made certain decisions. Okay. So don't say you made it red and you made it slow and you used this type of lighting and this type of HDR, your client does not care. They do not care about what renderer, what lighting and all, and what tool and what plugin you used. What they care about is that their needs are being met, and that if it's warm and inviting, that you are thinking through that as you make these decisions. So when you're in front of that client, you could say, look, I listened a lot about what you're saying about making this warm, making this inviting. And, you know, and that's why we went with this direction. We chose a more warm color palette, because that kind of feels like you're next to a fire, and who doesn't like being next to a fire? And then we chose this typeface because it kind of gives you this cabin feeling. You know, if you're in a cabin, it's got like a handmade wooden sign. So we went with this typeface to make it feel a little bit more, you know, homey and Christmassy. And who doesn't love like snuggling up by the fireplace at Christmas? And now you're like, okay, they're like, yeah, I like that vibe. Or maybe they don't, but at least you're communicating using like physical language instead of technical language.
You guys are making me glad that I've never had to deal directly with clients at all.
You think you'd be good at this, Chris?
I would be the worst.
I would love to see it, man. That would be fantastic.
Like, even as you're describing it now, like my brain, it's just not the way my brain works. And I'm just like coming up with counterpoints to it. And I don't know if this is fair, but just, you know, you were describing your school project. You're talking about these CDs and these towers, and, you know, it's like, okay, you're talking about the mechanics of it. And I get that. But to me, like, I totally get the reason for this whole process, but the reason I'd be terrible at it is, to me, it's like, well, if I have to explain that these CD towers represent city and this does this and this does this, then the artwork has failed. If I'm saying any words to help convince you that this is good, then the artwork isn't standing up on itself. So this is just a series of caveats and trying to convince them that what you're showing them is what everyone will see, given a description that these other people won't have.
Yeah,
so but like remember, right away, I'm like, caveat.
Yeah, but remember this though, Chris, that in many ways, when we make stuff, we're making it for ourselves. We're in a lot of ways in an industry where we make products for people like us. So if it's working on us, it's working on our client, on our customers. It's, you know what I mean? Like it is one-to-one, but that's rarely the case. You know what I mean? Like in so many ways, and especially in motion design, you're the person paying for that commercial is not the target market, and they don't know, right? So like the owner of the owner of Sony or whatever, and if they're trying to make like a cool Walkman fun product, they are not the target market, and they can't take that internally and say, oh, it works for me, it works for our customers. Does that make sense? So like,
no, I think even beyond that though, like, so this is a perfect example of, in my opinion, why it's okay for some people not to be creative directors and be in front of clients. Like, I had people working for me very much like Chris that were like phenomenal artists, but it's just not in their DNA to do this other thing, like to do the song and dance and do this explanation. And I would fight with like the higher ups who were like, well, you know, the natural trajectory of Chris is for him to become a creative director, right? Because that's the trajectory for everyone, right? And it's like, no, dude, like, no. So if his brain doesn't work that way, fine. Like maybe he just would never be in those situations. But I think the point that Nick is trying to make is that it's not about whether or not your art can convey the idea that immediately, because number one, clients aren't really good at visual communication anyway. Otherwise they wouldn't be talking to you. They'd be doing it themselves. So you're going to have to sort of walk them through the early stages of your project in a way that they can see. The problem is this, like, we are visual communicators. We can do this thing called imagining. We can imagine things. We can put like ideas. You can tell me something and I can formulate a vision of it in my head. There are millions of people in the world that are just not tuned that way. It's just not part of their daily job. It's not part of their existence. I mean, they can do it, but you need to help them more than you would, say, me or Nick or somebody like that. You have to sort of be a bit more descriptive, a bit more speaking their language. Most of the time, you're just trying to gain their confidence. You're just trying to get them to say, okay, Chris really understands us, understands our needs. I feel good about what he's doing with this idea. I trust that he's going to make something that's going to speak to my coffee brand. I believe in him because of this presentation. I think if you just, even if your artwork for this, let's just keep using this CD thing. Even if you put that in front of them and it was really obvious what it did, you would still have to sell it with some talking to make them feel confident that not only can you execute a really great idea, but you can communicate why it's great or why you think it's really profound.
Oh yeah. And I can imagine this being, especially for like freelancers. I mean, there's plenty of people who are in studios, but those studios in theory already have an infrastructure to do this. But someone going freelance who now has to speak to clients directly, this goes to like an old school thing, Nick. And it's a concept you introduced to me via some of those books that you tend to recommend, which is like the whole concept of like shipping, which it doesn't matter if you make the most amazing stuff in the world, if you never publish it. And along these lines, it doesn't matter if you can make the most amazing commercials and the most amazing animations or the most amazing stills in the world, if you can't convince the client that this is something that they want and that will be useful and that will achieve their goals. If you can't convince that, then it's almost like you didn't make anything at all.
Right, because the bid won't go through, the job won't get awarded, right? And you have to remember too that the budget to make the thing, the image or the animation, is oftentimes the smallest part of the budget. What a client is often committing to is not just to pay the freelancer, the studio to make this thing, but they also have to go out and pay YouTube and Hulu and NBC and ABC and NFL to like put this in front of all these people. So they're making a very, very expensive decision, and they need to have, you need to have their trust that when they put their money down, not just on you, but on all the future commercials and all the future payments that will put this commercial in front of eyeballs, that it is worth it. And of course you have to be good at what you're doing. You can't BS your client and say, yeah, I got this, and then fail them. You have to be good at it, but you also have to earn their trust, because they are taking a giant risk by, you know, working with somebody that maybe they don't have that trust with. So it is about trust, and it is about,
it's even more about that in the live action. If you're doing any sort of live action direction for commercial work, I would say it's almost entirely about how well you're able to sell yourself and get them to trust you. I did some live action work, quite a bit of live action work when I was at DK, and I toyed with the idea of going that route when I left. Like, do I become a live action director directing commercials? And it was so much a grind of constantly trying to win people over, and sort of pretending that you really are passionate about X, Y, Z, sometimes like multiple pitches a week, hopefully multiple pitches a week, that it's such a grind. It's such a, like, trying to win people's trust is exhausting at that level. Mm. It's way easier, I think, when you're in a motion design standpoint. You know, maybe you're pitching one or two a month, maybe three or four if you're really lucky. But to be a live action director, you are constantly selling yourself, like all the time, talking the talk. You know, I got this, you know, I know I'm in tune with what you guys are trying to do here. I really believe that I have an idea that's going to bring this home. I mean, just the wheeling and dealing, I could never do it. I have nothing but respect for those people that can do that on a daily basis. That is a huge, it's hard work.
So, you know, I'm thinking through, what are the things that you could do, no matter where you are in your career, to like get better at this stuff? And I'm trying to think of a few things. I have just took a few notes just listening to you, Chad. And one of them is talking with your peers and just like trying to have more of those conversations. So the best way to practice is like behind the scenes, right? Like not in front of the client. So early on, no matter where you are, if you're literally, even if you're just starting out, when you post something online, whether it's a daily render or even a school project, one of the things you have to keep in mind is what was the goal of that project? And if the goal of the project was like literally just to learn the software, that is a good goal. But you have to start to get to a point where the goal of this work is to bring an emotion out from the viewer. That's ultimately what so much of your work has to do, that you, like if this was an art piece, what would you write on the little cardboard thing on the side of what emotion you're trying to go for here? And then what I would do is like show your friend and say, what kind of mood would you call this? Or if this was a movie, if you got a feeling of like a type of a movie or a genre of a movie, what would it be when you watch this little, you know, 5 second animation, or like when you see my render? And listen to what they say, because if they say it's like reminds them of a horror film, and you meant it to be a Pixar kind of vibe, well, you're not communicating emotionally through your work, right? So think of that. Like think of just what the final vibe is that you want your viewer to have when it ends. And by the way, we've all watched a million things in our career already that give us these vibes. We've all seen something that's like high impact, high energy, bam, 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 bam. And then we get this high off of it. And we've all had this like slow fade to like one word in the center, solemn vibe. You know, we've all had like the spooky vibe, like conveying that emotion and knowing how to talk about it early on will pay dividends throughout your career. Because maybe you don't need to stand in front of the client and sell this stuff, but even just talking to your producer or director or anybody internally about the emotion of it is gonna help you frame your work in a much more professional way.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. That's actually, if you know, if you see someone at a meetup and you know their work and you find this one piece to be interesting or something, go, instead of asking them, what tools did you use? You could say, how did you sell that through? Did they already have that idea when they came to you, or did you board that out? And how did that work? Can you explain that to me? That's really interesting. I bet they would love to like share stories about how they did that sort of thing. And if you can get them to open up that way and just start gathering this intel and figuring out little tricks and tips on how to get cool stuff sold through, or maybe ways to talk to clients that'll help you get your work out there, the work that you want to do. That's great, man. That's great. That's good stuff.
Yeah. I wonder, I'm just thinking through this too. And I wonder if there's this too, because we get this feedback a lot. People are saying like, hey, here's a piece of work. Can you critique it? And so many times it's hard to do because we don't know the goal, right? So it's hard to critique almost anything unless you understand what the goal is for this render.
Right. And I mean, you can critique it purely based on aesthetic, but it's like, if you don't know any of the backstory, then it's hard to really give meaningful critique.
Yeah. What was the goal? And now you can critique how well they've achieved that goal. But otherwise, yeah, it's like, okay, it's a pretty picture. Like,
yeah, exactly. So maybe the goal is to make it look mysterious. And if the goal is mysteriousness and it's too bright or too well lit, now we can talk about the technical side of it, but it's through the goal of what the vibe is. And I keep using this word vibe, but it is emotion, right? It's the feeling you get when you see this render. And that's a much different way to talk than what renderer you used, right? And so just building that vocabulary up in even amongst peers can help you solve these problems long term.
Yeah. No, I think that's cool. I think that I wish more creative directors would sort of explain that part of their process, because it's something that nobody really teaches. And you don't really get to see it unless you're working alongside one at a studio. So it's hard. And I just thank God I was able to learn from some of the best, in my opinion, at that sort of presentation skills, client interaction skills and just learning from those people and just soaking it in. And even just being able to hopefully pass that along to people that work with me too, like being able to sort of take some of that stuff that I had and got from people and hopefully they pick it up and see it.
To what degree could a creative director, should they translate that to the artists? Because essentially a creative director could, you know, they're the person who can speak the artist language and they also speak the client language. So they, in a lot of ways, turn into like the translator or the interpreter between those two groups.
That's a big part of the job right there.
Yeah. So along those lines, I mean, do you just speak to the artists as artists and the clients as clients, or can you start using some of the terminology of the client to the artist? You know, it's one thing to be like, okay, make that image warmer. But then you could also go to your artist and say, we want this to feel more friendly and inviting. You know,
if I came, like, let's say that, you know, I'm working on a job and somebody, let's say you're the 3D artist on the job and I'm the creative director. If I go to the client and I'm like, all right, here's our latest version, tell us what you think. And they say something like, what did you say? Friendly? Is that what the word?
Yeah. Friendly and inviting.
I wouldn't leave that room without getting clarification on what that meant to them. In as prescriptive a way as I can get out of them. Like, they're not going to, it's my job to interpret that into action, but I want to try to get them to tell me as close as I can what that means to them.
In that case, are you in that room with them and you're saying like, okay, so like warmer and friendly. So we're thinking like, we're going to go with some warmer colors. We're going to keep the camera close so you feel like you're close up and personal.
My approach wouldn't be to like get too prescriptive and like describe what I was going to do. I would just say, like they say, okay, I want this to be warmer and friendlier. I might say something like, okay, cool. So right now it's not feeling very warm or friendly to you. And they might be like, well, this part is, but this one part isn't. And already I've narrowed it down to one part. And then I might add, and it's just about systemizing, sort of like it's not that they're withholding information. They just don't know how to communicate it very well. So I would say, well, overall, it's not feeling warm and friendly, or is there a specific part that's just not feeling warm and friendly? Oh, it's just really this one shot right here. And now I've just narrowed down all of the work to this one shot.
And now you have a vibe on the other shots that are working
too. Exactly. That's another great tactic, Nick, just to be like, okay, cool. So with this shot, you think has the right vibe? Is this sort of like, this one's working for you? Yeah, because that one light is coming in over here, and that's really, you know, that looks, makes the product look really warm and friendly. Boom. Got it in my head.
Yeah, more of this, less of that.
Yeah. So now when I go back into the area where the artists are and I see you there, I'm like, hey, so we got a few notes, nothing too crazy. I always tell them their note so that they know what the client actually said. I don't withhold anything like that. I'm just like, the client was saying that they need this to be more warm and friendly. Given what I learned and I just met with them and talked to them about it, what they mean, I think, is this, but I'm open to your idea. If you've been working on this shot, if you have an idea of how to make this more warm and friendly, given all the information I just gave to you about my meeting, then let's do it. And then now everybody is sort of on board with the direction and knows what shot needs the work. And we can go back and say, okay, we addressed it by doing this, 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 and this. And we think it solved your problem, and we think it's great. And I think that's another thing too. Like, it's okay to, when you're presenting the work back to the client, to have confidence in it and say, well, we warmed this one light up. We put a rim light on the product. We lowered the camera angle. We did all these things. We think it really helps. We think it actually is really hitting this warm, friendly vibe that you were talking about. We're really anxious for you to take a look at it and give us thoughts, and just let them know that you like it, and that, because that ultimately they pay you for your expertise, your eye, your vision. So if you just say, well, here's the notes back. Here's, we made it look what we think you think is warm and friendly. here it is. Like, that's not going to win anybody over. But if you walk in and you're like, you know what? Chris had this great idea of putting this one texture on it. I won't get too in the details, but he was onto something here, and we really think it nailed it. And we really like this shot now. We see what you were going for before, and we agree it wasn't warm and friendly enough. I think we fixed it. Check it out. We look forward to your positive feedback. And then you just sit back and drink beers and
wait for the email.
Yeah, wait for the email.
Well, you're describing something we talked about, was it last week, 2 weeks ago, about the camera podcast we did, where we all if we watch movies and TV, which we almost all do, especially in this industry and especially our clients and customers, we all have this built-in language that film has taught us over time, how to respond to certain music cues, how to respond to certain colors. And our brains have this natural ability to pick up on patterns and to pick up on vibe, right? It's a weird word, but that emotion is baked into certain things. And a lot of what we have to do is interpret their words into actual words. Just like you said, Chad, like, they're saying it's not as warm or inviting. And then it's up to the designer, or the creative director, or the producer to interpret that, their language, into what the actual technical problem is. And then, like you said, like, be the interpretation between the client and the person doing the work. And if you're the same person, to be able to break it down into language that you can actually control. And then, again, walk back up to that client and sell them back what their emotional vibe was, knowing that you nailed the technical side of it. And it's hard.
I think that too, just something, you know, came to me while you were going through that point, is that it's actually sometimes easier to be the CD or the artist and not be both. Because the hard thing, and I have had to do this and it's hard, is to be both. So you're not only trying to understand, you're trying to be empathetic. And that's really what you're doing as the job of the creative director, is sort of get into the shoes of the client and understand what they're feeling, what they want to feel, what they want to get out of this. So you have to have empathy, and you have to sort of interpret their words, all those sort of things. But what's great about having this role, this creative director role, is that sometimes when you're doing the work, you can't see anything but the work. You can't take a step back and look at the entire piece, because you're knee deep in render settings or whatever, and you can't take a step back and kind of see it holistically. And that's hard. And I have respect for freelancers and one man operations or small shops that have to do both roles, because that's tricky. That's tricky to go into a room with a client and try to look at something from a 10,000 foot view, and whether or not your piece is actually hitting the brief, and then go back into the minutia and like try to figure out if it's working from the minutia up. That's tricky, man. That's hard. You're muted.
I was muted. Yeah. That's where having a buddy or a peer or somebody you can bounce ideas off of is really helpful at almost any stage, because they're removed from it. You know, in a lot of ways, even early in your career, you could just show work to people and say, I want you to don't say anything positive. Like, if it's your mom, let her tell you did a great job. But then as soon as she's done with that, have whoever's watching this tell you what emotion they're feeling, like what kind of like feeling they have, or if they don't have that thing, like I said earlier, like ask them what genre of movie or type of song they're feeling or hearing or whatever. Try to get that feeling out of people. And I guess what I'm getting at is, if you're too close to the work, try to just send it to someone else and get their vibe, like, and say, am I on the right path here, or is this totally off base? And, you know, really listen to that.
That's super helpful, man. Perspective is everything. And I think it's hard to sort of like take a step back and look at something. And that's something that I would sometimes work with artists on, is like, okay, well, you've been working on one aspect of this for a really long time. Let's all meet up in the edit room and look at this piece together as a whole, because everybody's been working. It's like building a car, and everybody's been working in a different part of the factory, working on their part of the car. And they very rarely get to see the car completed or even in any stage of completion. So I always try to get people together and like, okay, we're halfway through. We have a pretty good rough cut going. Everybody pile into the edit room. Let's watch this thing so that everybody can see how it exists right now. How does your wheel meet up with his axle, meet up with their frame, you know, like all these different things. Cause then what that does is like, it makes people feel more invested in the process and project, but it also gives people an opportunity to be like, hey, you know what? My wheel isn't really fitting with your axle. It's like a little bit off. I bet if we work together, we can make that better, that little transition or whatever, if it's you know, two elements of a piece, and that is good. But yeah, I forgot where I was going with that. But
I just have a question for you, Chad, because I know you've dealt with this and I'm sure a lot of people have. How do you take a client who knows whatever's on the screen is what they don't want, but they kind of can't describe what they do want? So usually there's words like, it's got to have more impact. It's got to, you know, it's got to be more, have more spark to it, you know, add a little, you know, whatever. Like there's all these generic words that a client can, with good intention, bring to the table and say, look, you're not hitting the mark, but they're not descriptive enough to put you in the right direction. So what do you say when a client says, I'll know it when I see it? Because we know that it's so hard to do.
That's the worst note you can get right there.
Because
I don't know.
This is about a possibility.
I'll know it when I see it. That to me, and that always just really rubbed me the wrong way. I just never.
Yeah, but
I never liked.
They don't know what they are paying you to get to a vision that they might not even have. So how do you steer a client through that, or how do you ask a better question to them?
That's exactly it. That's, you have to ask the questions. That is not an answer that I would never took that as direction. Nobody ever said, I'll know when I see it. Like, I can't work from that. So I don't sit there and tell them, well, no, that's not good enough for me. You need to tell me what is wrong with this, or what do you want to change, or what do you want to see? I wouldn't do that. I would just say, okay, so let's do this. I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions, and I'm going to start just whittling this down and like eliminating possibilities. And that's how I would do it. And I would do it in a very, you know, nice, polite way, but I would never walk out the door saying, all right, looks like we're just going to make a bunch of stuff, and he'll know it when he or she will know it when they see it.
So what are those questions, and how would you formulate it? Is it a set of questions, or is it based on their brand, or
it's instinctual, really? It's a job to job thing. Hopefully you will have had like some sort of idea of what the aesthetic is of this client, what's the aesthetic of the brand, what's the goal, what's the brief. So you have all those things. You're not completely in the dark. You have some ideas of what they're after. So now it's just a matter of like, okay, what is energetic to them? What is appealing to them? What do they think this means? What do they think that means? And now you're just basically trying to make a Rosetta Stone where you can interpret these vague, sometimes confusing, conflicting notes and digest it into something actionable by the team, by you, by whoever. And that some clients are really hard that way because they just aren't good at that sort of communication. So it's the CD and producer's job to sort of massage that out of them to a point where, whether it's asking questions or putting reference in front of them or putting just asking them, well, what do you think is the best, like, let's say, I don't know, it's a coffee thing, right? what coffee brand do you think is doing this well in terms of what you meant about the flavorness or the flavorful bold,
such a client term.
This commercial needs more flavorness.
Yeah. So okay, that's a note you might get. Like that's a note that might actually happen. Like I'm not getting the flavorness of this coffee. And so you would have to sit there and think, okay, what the hell does flavorness mean? I've never even heard that word. Is that even a real word? I don't know, but they just used it. So now your job is to sort of navigate what that means to them. Okay, well, cool. Flavorness, I just triggered my Google Home when I said that. That's weird. I must have said something that was close to it, the trigger phrase. Anyway, so yeah, you'd have to be like, okay, well, does that mean more close-up shots of slow-mo coffee beans being, you know, dropped into a bin? Or like, what does that mean?
Which we have a tutorial for, by the way.
Yeah, that's true. So we got you covered. If you need that flavorfulness, we got the tutorial for you.
We got coffee beans and we got Cheez-Its.
We got you covered in both the cheese and the coffee. But yeah, you're just interpreting at that point. But man, I've had some situations where I'll take the I'll know it when I see it note more than I would take conflicting notes. There's nothing worse than conflicting notes because then
if somebody gives you that, what's the path way out?
Oof, man, there's no easy way out of Clint. So it usually means I might be just speaking for my own. Okay, so let me preface this by, this is my experience. You guys might out there might have completely different experiences than me, but this is my experience. When you get conflicting notes, there's usually something going on. It usually means that the client is not really certain about the path they've chosen, or they're not certain they can sell the path they've chosen to their boss, or there are too many cooks in the client's kitchen. And those are all bad things. Those are all things that equal more time and hopefully you'll be able to get some overages if the indecisiveness is their fault and you're not meeting deadlines. That's a whole other podcast. But yeah, I mean, generally speaking, it usually means that something is going on their end. And that's when having a really good producer can really save your butt, because a really good producer is going to have a side conversation with their producer and be like, yo, listen, your creatives are a little bit all over the map and we're having a real hard time tracking what we're actually supposed to be doing here. So it would really be great for everybody if maybe you guys just went off and figured out exactly what you're after on this and then come back to us with some notes and we're happy to execute, but we're just seeing that we're seeing the beginnings of some trouble that we could probably head off right now if we just had a conversation and you guys went off and figured this out. So having a good producer, top notch, man. Like I worked with some really amazing producers and like they have like saved us numerous times from those types of situations.
Yeah. The best producers are interpreting language on both sides, and they know how to talk to clients, they know how to talk to artists, and they know what to say and what not to say to both sides. And that is a good producer is I've also worked with a couple of those. It's life-changing.
And what's great about a good producer too is that if they're doing it right, then everybody is sort of coming out in the best light. So it's they're essentially like this almost like a keeper of the peace of sorts, and their job is to spin all these plates and make sure everybody's happy. But it's also like this jigsaw puzzle of egos too that you have to navigate and make sure that nobody is offended or nobody thinks that, you know, their vision isn't up there or whatever. And just like all these things, all this drama and whatnot that they have to navigate and sort of make sure that that if the producer does need to have a sort of harsh conversation about budget, that the creatives are sort of a little bit isolated from that so that the client doesn't feel like the creative vision is being driven by budget, and it should always be driven by creative, because that's really important for those people. You know, they didn't choose to work with you or your studio purely because of budgetary reasons. Hopefully they chose you guys because you're awesome and doing killer work. So the last thing what they want to do is they don't want to think that decisions or things are being done purely because of budgetary concerns. They want to make sure that they're getting the coolest, best thing that communicates the coffee. The flavorfulness has got to be coming through. Otherwise, you know, they could have just done it themselves.
All right. It's been too long. I think it's about time that we do a crazy, weird Nick analogy. I got a good one this time.
It's coffee. It's going to be coffee. I know it.
It's not coffee. So think of it. This isn't a perfect analogy. No analogy is perfect, but I like this one. This one's fun so far. So imagine somebody taking a photo of a family. Okay. So there's a family. You got mom, you got dad, you got one of the kids. Maybe there's a dog involved. The family is coming to you to take a photo of the family that they could put on their wall and put in a frame this part of their life, this very emotional part of their life. They have maybe a new kid. They have, it's Christmas or whatever it is. Like, there's an emotional side to this final product that you are delivering and what they are paying you to do. They don't care what camera you use. They don't care your lenses. They don't care how long it took you to set up the lights. They only care that this frame represents this emotional part of their family at the end of the day. And in many ways, maybe what they're paying you to do is to know how to keep a kid smiling at a camera. Maybe what they're paying you to do is, how do you get a dog to look at a lens, right? Maybe what they're paying you to do is to also have a fun time in front of this camera and hey, everybody, let's get together. And there's like an emotional side to not only the process, but also the final piece of film that's on the wall. And when you think about all this as a holistic way of doing it, you need to know your cameras, and you need to know your lights, and you need to know your renderers and your render settings and all that stuff. And you could talk gear behind the scenes to all your friends, but your client does not care. They want to have a good experience, and they want to, they want a final piece that they can go show off to their friends or family or client. And that difference is something I didn't understand, that there's this whole other side of selling and making sure everyone's having a good time and making sure the kid's looking at the lens. Like, you know, the analogy's falling apart here, but that side of it is just as important to the client, or more important to the client than how long it took you to render each frame. And understanding that there are two sides of it helped me navigate this stuff. So I don't know. I think that, did that analogy, is there something to that one?
Oh yeah.
It's very close to actual production, really, because there's a visual medium being delivered. There's people that you need to please. It's solid.
All right, good.
It's like almost too close though. Like, usually you go like someplace really crazy with it. I was expecting like, I don't know what else.
It's like grinding. See, this is the thing. This is what makes me halfway okay with analogies. It's because I've learned by selling home theaters and TV spots for 20 years how to make connections. And ultimately, that's what you're doing. You're making a connection from what you're doing to what's in their mind. And that's what analogies do. That's what sales does. You're bridging the gap between this thing and this thing.
Yeah, I mean, an analogy is just basically a way to make somebody think with empathy. Like, let me think about how that, you know, oh, I've experienced that. Like, I know that. Now I understand. And that's what it's, the putting yourself in other people's shoes is just a very sort of underrated skill in this business. And I think that it's a crucial one if you want
to. I mean, I think that's an interesting way to look at it. So just a couple of things in closing as we wrap up too. An interesting way to practice this stuff is to A, sell work that's not yours. Like, divorce yourself from your own work and just trade. Like we used to do this in school in the same class. We'd trade each other's work and we'd have to go up and pitch the other person's project as if it's our own. Right. So now you're really bullshitting. Like now you don't know the actual emotion.
Do you know? Wait, do you get to have the artist explain what they did?
No, it's literally like, listen, I really thought
then that's complete bullshitting.
It's all bullshit, but it gets your brain in the like keeping the party going vibe. You're like, I really thought about, you know, the like fuchsia color, like, you know, you literally start training yourself to find why things are and make connections, right? You're making a connection from what the client wants to what this is. So I would say trade work and just practice that. But I think actually analogies are an interesting way to think about this, because if you know how to sell it to your client through what they already know, then you could say something like, look, it's just like making espresso. You guys know, listen, I'm no expert in espresso, but you guys know how to make a coffee. And you guys know that most people don't care about how much you tamp it down, and they don't care about how perfectly fine ground every piece of coffee is. You guys know that that's important. But at the end of the day, your customer just wants a great, delicious cup of coffee that's going to give them that, you know, warm vibe or whatever. Like, that is a way to connect with them that you can try to do, right? Like that's, I mean, whatever. I guess everybody should just get a sales job, right? Is that what we're trying to tell?
Well, I mean, yeah, why not, right? I mean, earn some
extra money. Don't bark at a carnival.
Yeah, dude, it's part, you got to be part carny, part DJ, part, what's the other one that we covered? Selling stereos, I guess. And
barista. Yeah.
Chris, what job do you think you had early in your career that has helped you the most, that's not 3D related?
Well, nothing along these lines at all. I mean, the best one obviously is going to be having done teaching. Like I got to be in a classroom and physically teach students. So that helps talk tutorials through and whatnot, but that's not a salesman thing.
No, I think there's something really similar there for like sales and teaching and all that.
See, yeah, that's almost the same thing.
Yeah, it's like being entertaining and connecting with people. And that is what it is.
And putting yourself in their shoes and figuring out a way to explain a new concept to them that they can understand. Like that is selling. That is the same skill.
Selling, teaching. It's really the same.
I mean, one of them... it's pretty much the same. I mean, some people approach it in completely different ways, but yeah, I mean, when you think about it, you're teaching someone that something that they've never done before. You have to understand, you have to see it from their POV before you can even give them instruction that's meaningful. And that's sort of what you do with a client, hopefully.
Yeah. And Chris, you're great at that. Like when you teach somebody, especially somebody new, you're like, you're so aware, and this is so hard in teaching, you're so aware of how beginners think that you go and over explain and make sure people know and show them and like that's a perfect way to think of it.
Do you realize that we're selling Chris on him being a seller?
It's not gonna work. It's still not the way my brain works.
We are now, we just sold Chris on him being a salesman.
I continue to appreciate every day that I don't have to deal with clients.
Hey, man. I'm with you there.
All right. Well, listen here. It's important to us that we have both sides. We talked about both sides a lot in today's podcast with the technical side and understanding that you have to be good at all that. And we have hundreds of tutorials and plugins and training and all this stuff to shore up that side of your profession. The podcast and what we're trying to do with talking through this stuff is to try to get the other side, try to get the sales and the marketing and the how to get the word out about what you do and how to get a better job or your first job and all those things. And I know I've said this all the time, but it is understanding that there's a balance of this. If you do this for a living, you already know this, that there are both sides. So hopefully, you know, we're trying to address both sides and the podcast is where we're trying to do more of that. So I'm asking you guys too, if you have something along these lines, we'd love to see it in the comments. We always look at the comments. We get ideas for topics in the comments. So if you've run into something in the last month or two in your career, you have a question about this side of things, please drop it in the comments on YouTube. If you're listening on iTunes or on a podcast anywhere, just come on over to the blog. This is episode 97. Is that correct?
97.
Come make a comment. We're always looking and listening to you guys, because you know you are out there. You're working with clients. You're doing this for a living, and we want to help. So that's the goal here. We'd love to hear from you. And if you have any feedback, please head on over. Do we have any show notes for this one?
I think we got right into the topic.
We just jumped right in it. So I guess with that, we could wrap it up. Let's end the podcast by if you had a catchphrase, what would it be?
Wait, personal catchphrase?
When in doubt, use a connect object.
That's personal mine. Catchphrase. That's a good one. Chris. So Chris's is.
Yeah, dude, I have no idea.
Chris's is, what was it, Chris?
When in doubt, always use when in doubt, use a connect object.
Mm-hmm. Chad?
Dude, put me on the spot.
I know.
I don't know, man.
Selling. This is selling yourself.
Maybe I am a good salesman. I got it right away.
Chris got it.
Wow, I'm at a loss. No, okay. So how about this? I'm gonna steal one from a good friend of mine, who I use this quite a bit, and that is, keep it simple, stupid.
Keep it simple. Kiss it up.
Yep.
Mine would be, let's see, learn, do, teach, repeat. Thanks for listening.
You already had that one.
I know.
It's not fair. I wasn't prepared.
I pulled it from the recesses of my brain. That's fair, right? You gotta have your go-to. I'm sure you never repeated yourself as a carnival barker, right?
No, never, never. I could guess your date of birth, though.
Yeah, stay tuned next week when Chad's gonna guess everyone's birthday in the comments.
Yep, I'll get them all.
Thanks for joining, guys, and thanks for listening, all of you out there. Give us some feedback. We always love that, and reviews on iTunes, all that stuff helps us get the word out about what we're trying to do, which is help motion designers. So with that, love you guys. Cheers from San Francisco, and I will see you in another Grayscale Gorilla Podcast. See you soon. Bye, everybody.